30% is roughly the number that you should be self-sourcing if you're an account executive or working with a team of account executives. Today's episode is all about how to get account executives to, one, do more outbound, and two, be more effective at it. Before we get to that, my name is Jason Bay. Thanks for checking out Outbound Squad. What we're really passionate about here is helping you turn complete strangers into paying customers. So if you have teams of SDRs or account executives and you want them to do more outbound to land larger deals, break into bigger accounts, maybe there's a pivot to reduce reliance on marketing, inbound, whatever it might be, you're definitely in the right place. So today I'm really excited. We're joined by two guests, Kyle Parrish, who is GM and VP of Revenue at Mixmax. Dude's got a lot of experience, both in quota carrying positions and leadership. Aaron Milner is an enterprise AE at Aurum, and what they are both very good at and have done a lot of is self-sourcing as an account executive. So this is an audio excerpt from a live training that we did today, and we're going to dig into state of sales. So we're going to talk about why sales, especially tech sales, has become harder in the last couple of years. So if you're noticing that deals are taking a little longer to close, they're not quite as big as they were, there are more stakeholders involved, there's actually a lot of data that supports why that is true. We're going to talk about the percentage of pipeline that you should self-source. Bridge Group has got a lot of data that we're going to run through around what a typical AE would self-source, what the typical SDR to AE ratio looks like, and what support you could expect. We're going to talk about a three-part framework, prioritize, commit, and execute. So we're going to get really tactical with ways that you can prioritize your time, especially if you only have an hour or two per day to prospect. We're going to talk about committing. So what the weekly commitment looks like, what it should look like from a time blocking standpoint. And then, of course, if you've been listening to the show for a while, you know we like to get super tactical. So Arian especially is going to give us a lot of just tactical how-to on how to execute on this and self-source more pipeline and get your team to more effectively self-source pipeline. Before you get to the episode, if you could do me a quick favor, it would mean a lot if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, if you could like, subscribe, leave an honest review of the show so that more people exactly like you find it. That's all I got. Let's get to the episode. So we're going to talk today about self-sourcing pipeline. So this has been a really big trend that we've seen in the last couple of years, and we're going to dig into some of the data around it. But if you're an account executive or leading a team of account executives, how do we reduce reliance on SDRs, who we love our SDRs and we love marketing, but we're not going to hit our number and we're definitely not going to exceed our number unless we have the ability to self-source pipeline. So we're going to dig into that today. I want to give a shout out to our two sponsors, two of my favorite tools, Aurum, best dialer out there. I love Aurum's virtual sales floor as well. So if you're running a remote team, it just really comes in handy to be able to get the team on. You guys do this at Aurum, Aaron, on a weekly basis with the account executives. Just have a virtual sales floor where people can come in, make some dials. Mixmax, I want to give a shout out to as well. My sales engagement tool of choice. And I think the biggest thing I love about Mixmax is it's not overly complex and hard to use. I just use it right within Gmail. And correct me if I'm wrong, Kyle, you guys just launched an Outlook integration. As of
yesterday,
as well,
we essentially doubled our TAM yesterday. So really exciting times for us right now.
So I love Mixmax. Again, just super easy, straightforward to work. I love just being able to use it right in the Gmail browser. Okay. So to introduce our speakers real quick, we got Kyle Parrish, who is GM and VP of Revenue at Mixmax. Good to have you on, Kyle. Aaron Milner has been on the show, I think, a couple of times at this point. He's an enterprise AE at Aurum. And if you're coming across our stuff for the first time, my name is Jason. I run a company called Outbound Squad. We provide sales training, coaching, all of that kind of stuff for SaaS sales teams. So here's what we're going to dig into today. If you have questions, please drop them into the Q&A. We'd love to answer as many of them as we can. What we're going to spend a lot of time on is we're going to unpack the data and trends behind self-sourcing and why you should do it. And honestly, why sales is a little tougher right now than it was a couple years ago. We're going to talk about making the pivot to outbound. And then we're going to talk about the framework. So we have a three-part framework around how to self-source more pipeline, do it more consistently, and that's prioritize, commit, and execute. And lastly, because a bunch of you are asking, yes, this is recorded, and yes, it'll be sent out to you afterwards. Kyle, Aaron, you guys ready to rock and roll?
I
Let's
was born
go.
ready for this.
Let's do it. So I think what would help us in the chat here is let us know, give us a yes or a no. Does your sales org, or if you're leading a sales org, do you require account executives to self-source pipeline? Are they given a specific target? Maybe it's 20%, maybe it's 30%. Give us a yes or a no.
You saw my
Lots
answer
of
in there.
yeses.
Emphatic yes.
Yeah. Lots of yeses for the nos. That's good news for you. It's an opportunity to set yourself apart.
Actually surprised to see this many nos.
Yeah, we got a 50% in there. That'd be interesting to, if you haven't responded yet and the answer is yes, give us a percentage.
Yeah, what percentage pipe? And this will help us kind of customize the content for you guys today.
And I know that may depend. At MixMax, the answer for us is as much as it takes to make quota. If you're not getting enough pipeline from your SDR or from marketing or from our CS team in referral pipeline, you got to make up the difference yourself. So in some months, that could be 100%.
Yeah, we were asking you guys, what percentage of pipeline do you need to self-source? So let's talk about some of the data real quick. And we'll also, we got some big data points from the Bridge Group too on what sales orgs typically expect their account executives to self-source. So what you're looking at here is essentially the valuations, which really closely follow revenue for VC-backed SaaS companies. And what you can see there on the right arrow is that right after COVID, there was a period in like mid to late 2020, 2021 into 2022 that was just like you had to be horrible at sales not to close deals. Like people just wanted to buy stuff. And then a lot of you have probably noticed in the last year or so, especially Q1 of last year in 2023, that hey, all of a sudden it's a little tougher to sell right now. And prospects are becoming immune to cold outreach. 1% chance you get a reply to a cold email, 1.48% chance of a positive outcome from a cold call. And I don't know about you two. When I see that, I just think of all the effort that it takes to get a meeting. Buyers are taking longer to purchase. I think one of the things that really has stuck out to me is, you know, sales cycles have lengthened 40% since 2020. So it is taking longer to close deals. And the deals that we are closing are about 22% smaller. So there's a couple things, trends that I've noticed, and I'd love to kind of kick this your guys' way in a second. I'm seeing in the companies I work with, which are everywhere from five reps on the team to your Gongs and your Zooms of the world with hundreds of reps, there's just a huge focus right now on top of funnel and then AE self-sourcing on the outbound side. And on the sales side, it's, hey, we have a lot of bad deals in our pipeline that we shouldn't be forecasting. It's back to basic selling time. We got to get better at multi-threading. Kyle, I'll kick the first question over your way. I think one of the unique positions both of you are in is that you guys sell to sales leaders and sales orgs, so you get to hear kind of the problems. But Kyle, how does this compare to what you guys are seeing at MixMax?
Oh, this is exactly what we're seeing. And I'll start with the very first one. I've been here for 4 years and we're a startup. We're trying to grow. 2023 was a really tough year. But even in 2021, when times were great, quality pipeline was our number one priority. It always has been. And in most of the sales orgs I've ever worked in, building quality pipeline has been key. And you can never have enough of it. And when you do have enough of it, that means you need to hire more people. So you can literally never have enough because you can always hire more people. But I think this is back to basics type stuff, is only put quality opportunities in your pipeline that you have a reasonable chance to win. Now, reasonable chance to win may vary by organization. Some organizations want a 50% win rate and they don't want to take long shots on some opportunities. But generally, best in class is 20 to 25%. Maybe a little higher on inbound, but certainly putting in good quality opportunities and then making sure that those opportunities have a chance, a better than good chance to close by doing some of the things that you really need to do, like multi-threading. So this is absolutely what we're thinking about at MixMax.
What about you, Aaron?
Definitely agree. This is what we're thinking, and this is what we're hearing. You can see it just in the conversations. Folks are telling us a lot of what you had on the last slide. Inbound's drying up, deal sizes are smaller, and deal cycles are longer, right? And we need to fill that pipeline gap. I can also see it in the personas that come inbound or that book with us. More VPs of sales. 2 years ago, 95% of our customers were just the SDR teams. Now, an increasing number of them, it's SDRs and AEs, right? So I can see it in a couple different areas.
Well, especially in the case of both MixMax and Aurum, anything you can do to make it easier for an account executive to spend less time on the tools they use and trying to get a hold of people and just having more conversations is definitely where it's at. Let's walk through a couple data points that I think will be helpful for the audience. So what you're seeing here, this is fresh off the press with Bridge Group. This is their 2024 AE compensation report. So they pulled, I think it was 350-ish B2B sales works, and they ask them questions like this: what percentage of your team, of your deals, excuse me, in your pipeline comes from marketing versus SDRs versus AEs versus channel? And what you'll see here for the most part is that the larger your deal size, the more the account executive self-sources, with 100K plus deals being 30 plus percent. So I don't know about you guys, any surprise here? I'm honestly surprised it's not a little bit higher than it is right now, but 20 to 30% seems to be a pretty good line. I always say one out of, one third of your pipeline. For a lot of the people on the show today, they have to self-source 100% of their pipeline. But just so you guys know, this is what it looks like.
Yeah, I think that actually makes sense when you think about AEs self-sourcing pipeline for themselves. They're going to put in higher quality opportunities into their own pipeline because they don't want to put in stuff that isn't going to close and is junk. So their win rates are going to be higher. And they are, sorry to all the SDRs on the call here, but they're generally more experienced. And so they know what a great ideal customer profile looks like. And so they're going to target those specific accounts that have higher deals, that are larger deals, sorry. And so that does make sense that they're just better at prospecting into deals that are larger and close at a higher percentage.
Yeah,
This is
this is
where we
really
can start.
interesting, but somewhat
Go ahead,
unsurprising.
Aaron.
Yeah, really interesting stuff. Somewhat unsurprising. Broadly speaking, the channel partner section or contribution there increases, right? I think that makes a lot of sense too, and we'll touch on some of that stuff briefly today. I'd just like to reiterate that those dark blue deals, those AE self-source deals close at a higher rate. It's so important. I think there are a number of reasons around that. Kyle mentioned some of them, just like the selection and the qualification level. But AEs will also identify a little more pain when they've got someone on the hook and they're sensing some pain. They're more inclined to continue digging into that pain and truly find a problem to solve. They then show up to the discovery call better equipped, more prepared, right? So again, just to repeat, you're crazy if you're not trying to create your own ops.
Yeah, you have the experience as an account executive to have that exec level conversation. Okay, this is where we can spend a little bit of time talking here. I want to dig into a couple things here. And Sean Cook in the chat actually, he dropped some interesting stuff in there around AE to SDR ratio. But here's what the data shows also. This wasn't in the last round of Bridge Group's data. So this is from 2022. It's about a year and a half old. But the average ratio of AEs to SDRs was 2.3 to 1. And what you can see here is if you look at the graph, the part on the left, you'll see kind of a breakdown of what percentage of orgs have a 1 to 4 ratio versus 1 to 3 versus 1 to 2. I don't know about you two. I'm not seeing a lot of organizations right now, even though I see it in the data here, with a 1 to 2 ratio or a 1 to 1 ratio where, when you look at this, it is a bit deceiving where you might think over half of sales organization have one SDR supporting one AE or maybe two AEs. How does this compare to what you guys are seeing and hearing?
We're
I would
definitely
agree that.
seeing the same thing. Yeah, sorry, Aaron. We're definitely seeing the same thing. It's degraded over the years as well. It used to be more one to one, and now it is getting less and less because companies are trying to do more with less. And this is a sign of the times. You see a lot of SaaS companies, especially trying to get to profitability or at least cash flow break even, where they're not losing money. And this is part of it. This is just being more judicious about people resources and trying to do more with technology. I think this isn't about AI, so I won't bring in AI too much, but you'll start to see more of this and more of this with AI as it becomes more prevalent too. And this definitely makes sense. I'd love to see this in a year, and I think it will change within a year as well.
Let us, before you hop in, Aaron, let us know in the chat if you're an account executive or an SDR. Let us know, give us a number in the chat. How many account executives will a typical SDR support? So, for every one SDR, how many account executives will they support?
I think this
Yeah,
is
I
really
mean, a lot of
dependent.
teams.
This is really dependent on the segment that you focus on as
Yeah.
well. If you're an SMB focused sales org, it might be a little richer because there's just more accounts out there. If you're an enterprise focused sales org, it might be, I saw an 11 to 1 in there. It might be 11 to 1 just because these are, excuse the war terminology, these are rifle shots, not shotgun shots.
Yeah. I'm
Yeah, I
seeing a
would
lot
expect
of
this to
no more
look.
SDRs either.
Oh,
Go ahead,
wow.
Aaron.
I would expect this to look a little different the next time their report includes it. I'm hearing it a lot. As you mentioned, teams a couple of years ago, one-to-one was more frequent and common. I'll mention that, the obvious thing is here, like, okay, well, now these opportunities are getting spread across three AEs instead of one. That's obvious. But another difficulty here, a challenge here, is that now an SDR is having three meetings a week with AEs. It's just more time on the SDR's calendar, which SDR managers sometimes love, sometimes hate. They have to change gears. Each AE is different. I hear that even from my SDR. And so that's an additional challenge here that makes this even tougher for the SDRs to support all their different AEs.
Yeah, and if you are an SDR, that might not be the worst thing in the world. I think Aaron did a nice job of balancing the positive with the negative. The positive could be that you learn from three different people who have done the job and are doing the job that you probably aspire to grow into, and you can learn something from them. So if you do get changed from 1 to 1 or 2 to 1 to 5 to 1, think of it as an opportunity to learn from five different people.
A few of you are asking, the Bridge Group is where we're getting a lot of this data. They're sort of known for releasing the standards and the data on what people are doing in the sales development at least. So let's dig into the framework, you guys, and get tactical. And I think one of the first things we should talk about is actually SDR and AE collaboration. But we're going to dig into the tactics, you guys. So we're going to spend some time talking about prioritization. So, as an account executive, why is it important for you to prioritize where you spend your time? Because you have an hour, maybe 2 hours a day where you can do outbound. Playing that 80-20 role is going to be super important for you to be laser focused on where you spend your time. How do you commit? So, from a time blocking standpoint, what does this look like? And then executing, we're going to talk about some of the plays and things like that that you can run. So, before we get into some of that stuff, I think it would be a good place to start, Nair, and I'll kick this question your way first. For those of us on the call right now that have SDR support, what are some of the best practices that you've seen in your experience around how that collaboration could work? And maybe that's starting with how not to collaborate and the inefficiencies that you see. Because one of the big things, honestly, that I see is the dynamic between the two is really the biggest mistake, where the org has not set any guidelines around how they collaborate, and the AE is essentially the SDR's boss and just tells them what to do. And they have three or four AEs telling them what to do, and it's like very unclear for them how to run their day. But if from an account executive standpoint, Aaron, how can we get better at this collaboration? Because that's going to ease a bit of the burden, the self-sourcing burden for us.
Got a couple tactical ideas, but I'll start with something of a mindset one, which is you have a responsibility to this SDR. You think it's the SDR's job to make sure you hit quota. I would ask you to reverse that thinking. It's your job to make sure the SDR hits quota, and that means a couple of different things. Sometimes you throw them a bone. Sometimes, like if they need one extra meeting, like you should be hands-on in the trenches, giving them insight, making calls with them, doing whatever it takes for them to hit their number. It also means that you're responsible for developing and coaching them, motivating them as well. To use a sports term, if you'll pardon me, it's kind of like having a coach on the floor. sometimes the manager has to be a little like bland, a little coach speak, right? As an AE, sometimes you can give a more candid, more direct, more vulgar, more fun, more friendly piece of coaching. And sometimes that's around motivation, sometimes it's around messaging, right? So it's your job to build them up, like one to one, and actually develop them. And then also, last thing around that is boost them up, gas them up. You should be introducing them to other people, introducing them to the SMB or commercial sales leader, right? Getting them in front of the right people to help them develop in their career. If you can nail that stuff, all the tactical stuff that we can go through gets a lot easier.
There's a rep, a team that I'm working with right now. There's an AE Rick. I noticed he does this really well with the SDRs and the training calls that we're doing, where he talks a lot about his time as an SDR and what he did to accelerate his path to AE. And we talk about customer stories so much in sales, but rarely do I see a deliberate focus around, hey, when we're leading people internally, how are we sharing stories internally to inspire people? And as an account executive, the best way to inspire your SDRs is to talk about your time as an SDR and what you did to really crush it. Kyle, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I love that that happens, and I agree with Aaron. The account executive success is tied to the SDR success. And if you think of yourself as a team and that you guys are in this together, there's a lot of positivity that can come from that. And lots of times SDRs want to become AEs. So that story you just shared, Jason, of this is what I did, this is how I was successful when I was in the role, I think that's super relevant. As long as it is relevant, as long as you weren't an SDR like I was 20 years ago when things were just completely different. And so keep it relevant and make sure that they can see themselves doing the things that are positive that will get them to that next role. I think what Aaron didn't say, what he sort of alluded to, but what he didn't say is that if you have four AEs that you're working with as an SDR, and you've got one person who wants to coach you, you're going to gravitate towards that person and you're going to send more opportunities their way. Not send more opportunities, but you're going to work in their patches more and you're going to give them more attention because they're giving back to you. And so it is a symbiotic relationship. And I strongly believe that the best coach and the best partner is going to get the best results from their SDR.
So let's get tactical with this piece and keep going. I'll kick this question your way, Kyle. What should the AE provide to the rep in terms of, like, if we kind of think about, I think about outbound, there's like a targeting component of outbound and account selection and who to go after. There's a messaging component, and then there's kind of like executing through the different channels. If we focus on the targeting piece, how do you see that collaboration working best? I know it can range and there's some personal preferences, but around how do we approach the account? Do we approach it together? Does the AE go high and the SDR go low? Does the AE, or are they responsible for picking out people and telling them who to reach out to? Like, where do you kind of look at that if you were to guide the AE and say, hey, here's how you want to enable your SDR, but without like micromanaging their every move because you don't got time for that?
I'll say it slightly different, but you hit the nail on the head. I'll say it slightly differently in that I don't want in our organization two people doing the job of one person, right? And so, yes, there is an opportunity to go high and low and kind of meet in the middle in some of these accounts. And sometimes structurally, the company is set up in such a way that doesn't encourage that, right? It's either or. The SDR creates the opportunity or the AE creates the opportunity and somebody gets credit for it. And that's part of their job. In those cases, I would actually discourage you going after the exact same accounts because then you have conflict within the accounts, and then the account executive wants to create the opportunity because they're on the hook for it. And so sometimes it's coaching and giving them examples of how you prospect so that they can do something similar. And there's just a very quick saying, you get what you give. And if you give them coaching, you give them insight, and you give them training, and you give them the blueprint of how you've been successful doing it, you'll get a lot more from them. And again, I go back to what I said previously, which is if you put in some time and effort into coaching this person, they're going to give you more of their time and attention and opportunities.
Love it. Aaron, how do you collaborate with your SDR and Warren?
One important, seemingly obvious component is to have a scheduled routine, If you ask, hey, how are you collaborating with your partner? A bad answer, even though it sounds good, is we Slack all the time.
Yeah.
I think a cadence to it is very important. You should be coming to that meeting with your SDR with some insight, with a reason to go after some accounts that's going to make them excited. We'll talk a little bit more about this in a bit, but I really think there's almost a placebo component of tricking your own mind into being excited about this account. The best reps have too many ideas and not enough time. Every single case study that comes out, their gears start turning and they're thinking, who do I need to send this case study to? Every new big customer, their gears start turning. Some obvious ways that that shows up is like, okay, who else is in their industry? Who are their competitors? Who are their partners? And one I would add to that list is which private equity firm owns them. Let's go look at that private equity firm's portfolio companies. Holy cow, we work with another five of these groups. Now I get to tee my SDR up and say, look, these accounts are owned by XYZ. You know, they're funded by XYZ private equity. We work with other portcos of theirs. And you can hear it in the rep's voice. The prospect can hear it. It's no longer a cold call. So you should be coming with like prepared. You should be doing some work before this meeting with your SDR so that you're just feeding them with really exciting stuff.
So I'm going to write some of this stuff down. I think if we start getting into some pro tips around this prioritization is the first bucket, everyone that we talked about. And prioritization is, the best way I can illustrate this is the amount of effort that it takes to land a meeting has only gone up over time. You used to be able to reach out to someone 4 or 5 times and get a meeting. Now it's 12 to 15. The pickup rate's 5% or less on a call. Unless you're using, is it smart numbers you guys call it, Aaron?
Hot numbers, yeah.
Hot numbers. Unless you're using hot numbers from Aurum. But the bottom line is that it's a lot of effort to get a meeting. So let's be really selective where we put our effort. And I think one of the things that I want to write down here is with our accounts, like looking at, is there a mutual PE or VC firm for this account where I can say, hey, we're working with this Sequoia company here, notice that you're in their portfolio. Here's what we're doing for them. There's safety in them taking a meeting with you, right? And Daniela, hot numbers from Aurum, there's an algorithm and some AI in their dialer that helps prioritize the numbers that are more likely to pick up. And it's based on the millions of calls that people make through their platform. It's really cool. Nick, it's kind of like phone ready leads, but on steroids and completely automated. Like a human doesn't have to intervene with it. It's pretty sweet. So let's go down this rabbit hole, you guys, of account selection. Because I think one of the worst mistakes you can make is you have 100 accounts or 200 accounts as an account executive, and you just work the list from top to bottom versus cherry picking and looking for the warmest ones. Kyle at MixMax, how do you guys think about guidance for the account executive around where to focus their time, like what accounts, how to find low-hanging fruit, the people most likely to respond, all of that kind of stuff?
Yeah, the first part of the answer, I'll give you two parts of the answer. The first part of the answer won't be helpful to the individual contributor, but it might be helpful to you to go to your boss or your boss's boss, somebody very high up in the organization, and say, you need to do a real serious ideal customer profile exercise so that we can have accounts that are scored at a high level be very visible to us. And it should be very easy for an account executive and SDR to go in and look at a scored account in CRM or however you keep your accounts to be able to say, this is the priority of this account. And so I could go into depth on ideal customer profile exercises, but it should be pretty in depth and you should be able to understand what a good, like there's, I think of it like a dartboard. The bullseye of the dartboard is where you really want to spend a lot of your high quality prospecting time. And there's different qualities of prospecting. I won't say spray and pray is way out here on the outside, right? We're just not doing that anymore. That's not valuable. With the ones in the bullseye, you want to be very targeted. You want to be very personal and not just, again, this is a different webinar. Don't do junk personalization like, hey, I noticed you went to Iowa State. Great, that's not personalization. That's not relevant to them and what they care about in their daily work. I'll get off my soapbox on that.
Can you Kyle, sorry to interrupt you. Can you let us know, like, what are some of the criteria that you would look at in the ICP? Is it industry, employee count? Does it go like a layer deeper than that?
Oh,
Like, what are some of
absolutely.
those like fields that you would look at and
Yeah, I
criteria?
think the toughness in this exercise is that it can't just be firmographic stuff that you can get off of LinkedIn. Really, it starts actually, I'll start before that. It starts with what your customer base looks like, your most successful customers, not just any customer that you have, but the most successful ones, the ones that have renewed a bunch of times, the ones that have grown, the ones that have high usage, that have high adoption and are perceiving value, that you have executive relationships with, and they consider this technology core to their business. That is the ideal customer profile. When you start looking at other companies that look like that, perhaps it goes just beyond firmographics, things like industry and region and employee count, a number of salespeople that's relevant for Aaron and me. It goes beyond that to stage of company, phase. Perhaps a good baseline is how much money they've raised or what round they're in, things like that. But you ideally want to go even deeper than that to say, where are they in their growth phase? Do they need my solution now versus will they need it in 3 years? If I try to prospect into an account today that doesn't need me yet, it's going to fall on deaf ears. There's still some value to that. There's awareness building, but you're not going to create an opportunity now. And if you do, it will be too early and it won't close. So there is more to it than just firmographics. That's my apologies for the long answer, but this is not an easy exercise to do, and it can't be done in 5 minutes.
Yeah, I want to show you guys an example here. I just really have made a focus this year on this. This is a breakdown. I took the company names out of it, but we did an analysis of what around 30 of our last closed won deals. We looked at the niche, the industry, who the investor was, like the size of the sales team, SDRs versus AEs, employee count. And then where it started to get really interesting, and this is for you account executives. Who was the first meeting with? Who was my champion? Did I make contact with the economic buyer? What was the situation? And this is where I started to notice, like you guys can see, there's a very prominent pattern of situation. They need a playbook because they're growing the team really fast. They're going outbound for the first time. Outbound is a key tool or motion that's going to be key to their growth. Was it in budget? What was the priority? What made them decide to change? Why did they choose me? If you can do an analysis like this, even on an individual level, as an account executive, you're going to get a lot of really interesting data on your last 10, 15 closed won deals and even closed lost deals on where is a waste of time and where do I really want to double down on? And that's the game as an account executive with going outbound. It's like, how can I just spend a disproportionate amount of time where I'm most likely to win.
Yeah, and Aaron mentioned this earlier too, which is this can help inform marketing where they want to spend their time creating case studies, right? Aaron was rightly mentioned that case studies are a genius way for a company that you're prospecting to see their business in one of your existing customers and the success that they've had. If you can start identifying that some of the common themes in solutions that have brought value to your customer base, marketing should build case studies with those companies so you can continue to do that and lather, rinse, and repeat.
I think that's a great place to start. You know, it's important that these things are simple and actionable and fast because I'm an AE, so I can make fun of y'all. I know that none of you are going to make a spreadsheet like that,
No,
right?
no.
We're a bunch of right-brained, busy folks, right? I would just go to your case studies. The worst thing in the world that can happen is when you've got a hot deal and they're like, all right, we just need a case study in our industry. And you're like, son of a gun. Why did I ever go after this account in the first place? I have nothing to send them. So if you imagine that dartboard that Kyle described, like a Venn diagram, you've got maybe you just sell to a certain type of customers. You just sell to Salesforce customers, Snowflake customers, whatever, right? That's part of it. Account size, industry, geography, things we mentioned. Ideally, one of those Venn diagram spheres would be intent data, one way or another, right? And so think of it that way, perhaps, as like who checks the most of these boxes. Who's in the most of these spheres? Focus on that bullseye of the Venn diagram. But your case studies that are on your website today, it's where I'd start.
Great place to start.
Love it. And I showed this yesterday in a webinar, but I want to show one more thing.
Just while you're pulling that up, one thing to be concerned about, if you work at a really small company, your marketing department may have created a case study with a non-ICP customer. So do be careful that you do want additional customers that are just like them, right? Marketing is great for this sort of thing. Just like in Aaron's example, if you've got a case study with a specific type of customer, but it's not necessarily your ICP, there might be a reason for that, right? If you're going to start from, square one, start with your real ICP. Don't go beyond that to start. And then as you go, you can get further out.
Love it. So one other thing, and I'm curious how you guys enable this and how you do this at Mixed Max and Aurum is don't forget the power of LinkedIn Sales Navigator. I mean, just having my current accounts filtering for vice presidents and directors of sales and just doing little stuff like this. Hey, within my accounts, who's changed jobs recently? Because we know, according to User Gems, executives spend 70% of their budget on in their first 100 days on the job. So how am I prioritizing people that are recently hired? How am I prioritizing, if we're looking at years in current position, people that have been in a VP role for less than a year, because these are people typically that get new access to budget. So there's all kinds of triggers and things like that that you can look for. Another thing that I'm pretty religious about tracking is, I have lead lists with all of the champions I've ever had in deals. And like what you can do is you can start looking at, and this is like once you've been an AE for a year or two in that industry or in that company, you can start looking for people like, hey, here are all the champions that I've had in previous deals. Who's recently changed jobs and out somewhere else now that I can reach out to? So there's just a ton of stuff like this. Like there's so much low hanging fruit in there that you should just be cherry picking everything that you possibly can so you can spend more time prospecting and less time figuring out what you're going to do. You guys cool on this prioritize piece? Is there anything else that you would add in terms of this is really like a measure twice, cut once kind of exercise, a sharpen the axe before I start cutting down the tree kind of thing? Is there anything else that you two would add that we didn't talk about?
I'd say there's three outcomes that we're hoping to achieve with this piece of the puzzle here. We're trying to pick the right accounts, yes. The accounts with the highest likelihood to close, yes. Second, we're trying to speak in their language and have relevant name drops and case studies in our arrow quiver ready to go. And the third piece, most important perhaps, is to make yourself excited about the account. They're going to hear that. And you're not going to have to force yourself to do this stuff as much. You're going to feel an urgency. Because all these cool pieces of insight, all these little angles that you find, former champions that just moved, whatever the case may be, it's a perishable good. So if you do this right, the way you know it is because you're super excited to go after those accounts now.
I think that's, I've heard that from a couple of people at Orem, and this is highly, highly underrated. Like just being excited when you get an executive on the phone, when people hear that enthusiasm and excitement, that's where you get the, I like Aaron. Let's meet. Let's see what you got, and that's, you can't fake that and manufacture it. So getting excited about it, definitely. Okay. So we talked about prioritize. Let's talk about part number two, commit. So there's a aspect of this that's no different than working out that you got to put in the activity. You got to put in the reps and you got to go to the gym. There's just no way around it. I'll kick this question your way, Kyle. From an account executive standpoint, how would you advise or how do you recommend the AEs at MixMax think about, how much time should I block off for this? When should I do it? How do I maintain consistency around it?
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff like that that I find where just like going to the gym, if you don't prioritize it, it's and you save it for the end of the day, it's just so easy to say no to and skip. And this is kind of one of those things like eating healthier, going to the gym, I find. But how do you work with AEs and advise them around like the actual block and tackle of like making sure the commitment's there and that it actually happens, the activity.
Yeah, I appreciate the softball because this is an easy one. And I'll attack it maybe in a slightly different way than what everybody might expect me to say. Eat the frog. I don't know if anybody's ever heard that term before, made famous by Mark Twain. If your job is to eat a frog every day. Do it first thing in the morning.
Sean says
Take the
big
tough
frogs first.
thing. Yeah, take the tough th and, the, and that's the second part of it. Thank you, Sean. If you have to eat two frogs, eat the biggest one first. Right? Take the toughest part of your day out of the rest of your day, right? This is a human nature type of thing, right? Humans just naturally think we can get more done in a day than we actually can. And so why would you prioritize the most important thing? And by the way, prospecting is the thing that salespeople hate the most. Why would you take the thing that you hate the most and deprioritize it, push it down, push it down, push it down, so that you never get to it, right? Do it first. It's the hardest thing you'll do all day. It's the most important thing you'll do all day. And so you just got to do it. And I'll hand it over to Aaron so I don't take all of the thunder, but I know that there's a lot more to this. And in the prep call, Aaron said some really intelligent things, which I want to give him the opportunity to talk about.
Appreciate it. You know, I think mindset's big here, and then we can talk about how to come up with the actual metrics you need to hit, right? So first thing I'd say is you don't have to prospect. You get to prospect. We love that kind of mantra at Aurum. We have swag that says you get to sell, you get to call. And I think that's always accurate. I've always kind of felt that way, but gosh, in this tough economy, if you have a role, you're blessed. If you're being asked to prospect, I try to just remember how lucky I am. Right. I try to remember that the whole company is relying on me. This is often helpful to tell your SDR too, because gosh, you think you hate putting in these activities every day. Think of the poor SDR who does this all day, every day, right? Sometimes they need reminded that, man, we just got some funding recently. We just hired a bunch of people. We've got all these new finance and HR and all these people, and all of these jobs are counting on us. And again, I just feel like an not obligation is even isn't even the right word. I just feel like a responsibility, like ownership, to do everything I can for them, right? So be grateful. Remember how lucky you are, and remember that prospecting is an opportunity for you to get an edge on your colleagues, right? And then we want to talk about like how much activity do I need to do every day? What does that look like? And this can get really specific, but I'll try to keep it broad, something you could do on the back of a napkin. I think the simplest way to think of coming up with your own daily personalized KPIs is just to figure out how many opportunities you need per month, right? Or per week. So you can go look at all the opportunities you've ever had. How many of those did I close? Great. I know my close rate. I know my average deal size. You can figure out how much each opportunity is worth in real revenue. If you close $100,000 deals at a 10% close rate, you don't have to worry and stress and lose sleep about trying to close $100,000 deals. You just need to create a bunch of $10,000 opportunities, right? Each opportunity is worth $10,000 in revenue for you. And that's so important. I would try to do that math quickly. We could give more detail on it, but I think that's the short way to describe it. And then every day, every week, you know, am I on pace to create these ops I need or not? I say when you do that math, be conservative. If your close rate's 11%, call it 10. If your deal size is 55,000, call it 50. We want to do this math to set us up to smash our goals, not like barely miss them, right?
Yeah,
So curious, chat, if that's
I know Jason calls this the same thing that I do, which is sales math. And if you don't know your sales math, that's okay. I'm not going to berate you. Go figure it out. This is the first step. You've got to know your inputs that turn into outputs. And if you don't know that, then start today and start measuring and change as you go along. As you get more information, as you start to do this more and more frequently, don't be too rough on yourself. Be realistic. And I love what Aaron said, but be conservative. Don't assume that things are going to be perfect, right? If the entire org has a 25% win rate, that might be your starting point, but your win rate might be 20%, which means you need to put in that much more effort. And so this isn't advanced math either. This is division, right? It's very simple stuff. You can do it in a spreadsheet, and then you can track your activity on a daily basis. That's eating the frog, right? Time block specific hours in the day to do this. And be religious about it, right? The moment, just like Jason set this up, the moment that you give yourself an out, you'll take it because that's human nature, right? I don't have to work out today. Oh, thank God, I hate working out. But guess what? If you do this over time, it will start to become a habit, and it won't become the type of thing that you force yourself to do anymore. You'll get to where Aaron has gotten to over his career, that you get to do it, and it's exciting to do it. And he gets excited and happy and fired up to talk to customers. And that kind of attitude can be felt by your prospects, and it will improve your results.
Let us know in the chat, and then I got a surprise for you guys. Let us know in the chat, yes or no. Have you calculated your sales math down to the daily activity that you need to put in? So have you gone all the way down to, okay, I need to put in X amount of outbound activities per day? Have you taken it to that level? Here's the number I want to hit, the opportunities, deals I need to close, et cetera, intro calls I need to run, outbound activities I need to do on a daily basis. So we'll drop this into the chat. I got a sales math calculator. So for those of you that are not numbers people, which I don't know about you two, I find a lot of people in sales, there's a persona of salesperson that tends to be very like good at talking and presentations and doing all the sales type stuff. But this stuff just like, you know, the math part of it is pretty tough. This is a pretty cool little quick and dirty calculator. You could put your quota in there, your pipeline coverage, which is a representation of your win rate, your average deal size, and it'll tell you, hey, what do I need to have in pipeline? What do I need to self-source versus my SDR? And it'll punch out total outbound activity for you on a weekly basis that you can break down per day. So I'll drop that into the chat. Feel free to make a good, a copy, excuse me, of that. Maddie, what's up, Maddie? I'm good at calculating my commissions, Maddie says. That's good because I know a lot of reps that don't even pay close attention to their commissions. I'm like, no,
Gotta
companies
know
mess
that
up.
stuff. Here's it. Here's something I learned very early in my career. Don't calculate your commission before the deal is closed.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me mention, Jason, you know, you might have some folks who are going to start prospecting for the first time and they might not know how many calls it takes, right? That calculator is perfect. And I think the more activity, the more data you have, that's especially valuable. If you can't get there yet, find out how much closed won revenue each opportunity is worth. I really feel like that's a mental breakthrough moment. That's an aha light bulb moment. And then, gosh, it's such a wonderful world to live in where you just have enough ops. You're no longer throwing discounts at every deal. You're no longer calling every deal 10 times a day. You only have enough time to work with the people who are trying to buy. It's a great place to be.
Yeah, I think there's maybe room for to go back in time. Somebody asked the question, what's the difference between multi-threading and multi-channel? This is actually pretty important when you talk about activity that you are multi-channel. I do not suggest that you go crazy and you are single-dimensional, right? Don't just be email only. Be email with calls, with LinkedIn requests, with SMS, if your technology provides it. Shameless plug, MixMax does all these things. We actually use Aurum. So we use Aurum for our dialer. This is really important to us that we touch customer accounts. Touch is such a weird word, that we are in contact with certain accounts through many different channels. And that's really important. Don't be one dimensional here.
Yes, so that's a good segue into this last part. So far we've talked about prioritization, so the importance of really doubling down, applying 80-20 rule, and focusing on a subset of your accounts that are most likely to engage. Two, we've talked about commit. So being able to, on a weekly basis, commit to the activity, knowing your sales math. Let's spend the rest of the time talking about like execution. Aaron, I'll kick this first question your way. Let's get kind of like tactical with the block and tackle portion of this. And what I mean by that is if we know the outbound activity and we know roughly how much time we might spend on this, I think one of the mistakes that people oftentimes make is they don't task batch. So they do the equivalent. The analogy I always give is, you know, if you eat three meals a day, that's 21 meals a week. Imagine if you went grocery shopping every single time you had to eat. That would be 21 trips to the groceries. That would be a full-time job. You don't do that, right? You cook and meal prep and you create multiple meals from one-time cooking. How does that apply to outbound? Well, I think a big mistake is to open up an account, research, write the email, make the call, send it off, move to the next account, and you're in very different modes of thinking and doing low value tasks at the same time you do high value tasks. And it's just a really bad way to think of it. How do you think about task batching and like breaking apart the different components of self-sourcing and doing outbound.
Love the way you describe that. There's a lot of data, even from like the American Psychiatric Association, about the hazards of multitasking or switching tasks and how long it actually takes our brain to get good at the new thing we're doing that we just started doing 5 minutes ago, right? And so I love the way you describe that. So if we could think about all the pieces of this puzzle, a recommendation would be schedule a time block just to think about what accounts I want to go after. I'm just researching the accounts. It's everything we talked about. You're looking at industry, PE firms, what case studies you have that line up to whom. And at the end of that, maybe you have enough accounts to go after all week, whether that's 5, 15, 25. But I would just research accounts, just pick accounts, just put accounts in my name if that's applicable, or going through my named account list and picking the 10 we're going to go after first. I totally agree with Jason. I would do all that research together. Next part is similar, but on the prospect level, right? So I'm looking at things like, have any of these folks ever worked at a customer? Have they ever been a closed law stop? Have we ever talked to them? Who do I know that they know? Who are our second degree connections, right? And then there's obvious things like, you know what department and sales or like a hierarchy, you know, what department, what title you're going after. But try to do more research, and it's not just their college. Try to find things that are going to make them feel good. People will believe anything and listen to anything as long as it's a compliment. And so when you're looking for ways to personalize and you're scratching your head and you're like, well, darn, their college isn't in March Madness this year, so now I don't know what to talk about. Try to find some way to flatter them. And then,
How do you do that, Aaron? The flattery, how do you do that in a way that doesn't feel salesy or cheesy?
really important question, because I tell you, if somebody puts LinkedIn in the first word, the first sentence of their cold email to me, I know it's a sales email. Hey, I noticed on LinkedIn you're hiring, delete. So you want to avoid the I noticed narratives. And in my opinion, you want to avoid saying the word LinkedIn. The way you do it is start with congrats. Start with, whoa, nice job. And again, if it's a compliment, they don't hear the salesy part. They just puff up their chest. Like, I think flattery goes a long way, and but avoid the I noticed and the word LinkedIn, I think. You can just assume, say, since you're hiring, comma, I know you're struggling with this. Just as an example, like you can be assumptive in whatever observation or research you were able to identify.
Gotcha. And I interrupted you. You were about to say something else too, it sounded like.
No, you know, we talked about account selection, prospect selection. Now we got to start getting the touches in. What a lot of AEs will do is they'll write the best freaking email you've ever seen in your life. And then 2 weeks later, they're like, oh, wait, that person never replied. Let me go to my sent. You must be putting these folks in a sequence like MixMax allows and other tools that you might be using, right? Like, do yourself that favor. Take all of that work off of future you by putting these folks in a sequence and keeping up to date on your tasks. It takes a lot of the challenges out of the way for you.
And then lastly would be call blocks, right? So researching accounts separate from finding the contacts, separate from adding them into sequence and personalizing the emails, and then calling prospects. And Kyle, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say amen to that, which is you do not want to be doing this manually at the level and depth that you need to be doing this to fill your pipeline, assuming you're not an enterprise AE with one or two accounts, right? Like that's a different challenge. You need to be able to do this effectively at scale, and this is where technology helps you. I'm not going to plug MixMax any further. I'll go back to what Aaron said at the beginning, which is research and insight help you to personalize a message. If you've researched an account or researched a persona, and I highly suggest you do some of this chunking the work, as Sean has called it, which is task batching in Jason's language, which is if you're going to go after software companies with less than 200 employees and the persona of VP of sales, you can go after 25 accounts with those three things in a day. And you can have some similarities in those things, but you want to do that research and get that insight so that your personalized email actually resonates with them and is relevant to what they care about. Whether it's a congratulations email or something that is relevant to what they care about and what they're interested in solving a problem for, right? Without pain, there is no sale. So you need to get to that and recognize that your solution can alleviate a pain for them or make them money, right? Time is money. So these are the ways that people get interested in evaluating because you've hit on something that they actually care about that's relevant to their specific job. That's true personalization, not, hey, I did 5 seconds of sophomoric research and found out, again, in my example, you went to Iowa State. So what? That is not going to get, in fact, just like Aaron, I'm going to delete that email right away because it's so basic that it almost feels like wasted effort and like you're wasting both of our time.
Jason often kind of
So,
shows his email inbox, and at a glance, like I think it's such a great perspective for salespeople to see that from that angle of folks who get a ton of cold emails, and executives do what I call email triage, inbox triage. The first thing you're doing is just deleting the things that you know you don't have to worry about. And then there's some in the middle that you're not sure if I have to read this or not. You don't delete those, you check those out. And then there's the ones that are obviously internal or important, right? And what you're trying to do is not be misleading, but you're trying to sneak in with an email that their boss might send them. It's not like move faster and save money and we're cheaper, we're better. You're talking about pain, you're talking about problems. And I think that's so important that Kyle touched on that. You know, AE is an exercise I would encourage you to think about. If I asked you, what does your company do in 3 bullet points? You might tell me a bunch of nouns and adjectives about the product. Maybe you do a little better than that. Maybe you talk about outcomes. Kudos to you. The best 3 bullets you could do is 3 challenges that you solve. And that's how you're going to stick out in this vast, vast, world of outbound that they're experiencing, where they've got a million people telling them, we're going to help you be better, faster, and we're going to do it cheaper. They almost don't hear those. If I could sum up personalization in 3 words, Kyle touched on it, it'd be hypothesize the pain. Hypothesize their pain and they're going to listen.
well said.
love it. We got a couple questions I think that would be good to answer, and then we got to bounce. Maddie asks, if I'm almost halfway through quota, should I base my sales math on the rest of the way to achieve quota for this year, or just do it based on a whole year quota? Just curious on what you would do. I think there's a hidden question in there around like, hey, is it too complacent to just, shoot for quota? Should I try to overshoot? How do you guys think about, hey, if I'm doing pretty good and, I'm halfway there, how should I think about hitting the rest and pushing myself or creating buffer room, that sort of thing?
I could make a joke here about how much money do you want to make, but I won't. I will say this is actually really dependent on the person and the situation that you're in. And so, Maddie, for your situation, I don't know how much time and effort this would be for you to take on a prospecting activity like this. And if it draws you away from other important things in your role, I would say you have to balance that. You have to make sure that you're not forsaking other things for the sake of hardcore prospecting. You can't spend 100% of your time prospecting. That's not the job. So you do have to balance that. I would say shoot for over quota if that's reasonable, right? If that is reasonable and you can do it, I would aim high. I don't remember promoting anybody who is like just at 90 or 100%, right? I want to promote people who have shown an aptitude to reach higher than that. And if you're looking for a management role or something like that, where you can coach and teach and train other people, the people who have found a way to get to 200% of quota are exactly the type of people that I want to put in those positions to coach and teach and train other people how to do it.
And kudos to you if you could figure out how to do that without, killing yourself.
Yeah.
You can still have decent work-life balance. I mean, that's kind of the key is from a skill standpoint. Aaron, this next question I'll kick your way just to make sure we get this last one. What's the best sequence strategy for enterprise AEs? I know that's a huge question, but how do you think about like the touches and the channels versus like doing enterprise and strat style prospecting like you are?
Let me quickly mention that to Maddie. If you had an abnormally high quarter in Q1, protect yourself from that. You mustn't base your math off of that rockstar quarter, right? So a quick reminder to be conservative there. Maybe you have to look at the overall company average and conversion rates. to extrapolate out how your next three quarters might look, right? So just be aware of doing this after you just had a really, really great quarter. From sequence strategy, I would say, within reason, the more sequences, the better. I want to have strategic, personalized personas based on industry and title, if possible. And then what that allows you to do is have more automation in the sequence. Rule of thumb is someone that personalizes 20% of their emails to a prospect is going to do about as well as you can do. If you prospect 100% of your emails, you already plateaued at 20%. 20% is kind of the recommendation on how many of the emails or touches should be manual and personalized. And you want to put that personalization at the bookends of the sequence, email number one and the breakup email. And so I hope broadly speaking in 30 seconds that's helpful. Please drop me a line on LinkedIn and I'd be happy to give you more thoughts. But the more sequences, the better. Personalize the heck out of that day one email. That's going to pay dividends for the rest of the sequence in terms of your reply and open rate when you lead off with that really strong opener.
Love it.
I also
We
saw a
got
question
bounce.
about the kind of the weekly sequence. I would say what I love the eat the frog part. Was that Sean that had that question or Sam Cope? Do your least favorite part first, perhaps. That's one recommendation. Otherwise, Monday, I think, is a good day to do some of the strategy, some of the research, account selection, some of the administrative work that goes in. And then I like to do the actual touches Tuesday through Friday.
Love it. You guys, we got to bounce. This was fun. Kyle, Aaron, thank you for spending time with us. We just dropped a couple links in the chat. Make sure to check out Aurum, MixMax, connect with Kyle, Aaron, myself on LinkedIn if you want to see some more sales content and that sort of stuff. Really appreciate the engagement from the audience. And that's all we got for you guys today.
Yeah,
Happy
thanks for having me,
self-sourcing.
Jason.
Yeah,
Thanks, Aaron.
we'll see you
It was a lot of
guys
fun.
later, everyone. Have a good
Great.
one.
Thanks, guys.